Thank you for coming tonight. It's a good turnout from venture capitalists from all over the country, actually. It's great that you were able to turn out a lot of VCs from different parts of the country and different size funds, I noticed, as well. So hopefully you'll have a very good 2 days here, and I know that Chris has done a lot of work to show some very good companies. If anyone has done this before, you know that there's a lot of exciting things that go on over the next 2 days. So what we wanted to do, this is the first time that MVCA has kind of done a curtain raiser with Demo, kind of talk about what's happening in the industry in general, and then Chris can talk about the selection process and why certain companies are here and why some aren't here. Just a couple of things that basically kind of talk about the state of the industry as a whole. Right now, when you look at the statistics overall in the industry, we are in a very good position. I've been doing this for 15 years now, kind of tracking the industry, and we are certainly in a much better position today than we have been in a very long time. And the question is, you know, we have the ability to screw things up, and we've done that in the past, and the question is, are we going to do that? And I think that right now, the signs are that we have been extremely disciplined in what we have doing, that we really have learned some lessons from the past. And I think that when you look at the numbers, the most specific thing that I look at and I say, wow, this is pretty amazing, is that when you look at the last fundraising cycle, that was 1999, 2000, and 2001, this industry raised $203 billion. And you look at, we are now, we're at the tail end of the fundraising process right now. 2004, 2005, 2006. We raised 17 in 2004. We raised 25 in 2005. And in 2006, we think we'll raise about another 25, 26. So that's $68 billion. So, and I think that's very important to kind of, when you look at things for the next couple of years, keeping in your mind, $203 billion, $68 billion. It's a huge difference in what the industry can do and not do over the next couple of years. You cannot have, when you're looking at a $300 million fund instead of a $1 billion fund, you have to look at things differently. And I think that's what we're going through right now, a real change in outlook. We're starting to see the return of early stage investing. We're starting to see in 2005, we had the highest number of first-time financings in years. We're seeing a lot of stealth companies, this doesn't go at all together, but many, many firms are talking about these companies, but we're not seeing them in the numbers yet, and I think a lot of that, it's very intentional. When you look at where VCs are investing, it's interesting. Our numbers came out a week and a half ago, and some of the areas that popped up, the telecom sector, which had been just in the doldrums for years since the bubble, we're seeing slow gains there. We're not seeing dramatic increases, but what we're really seeing the money come out of is in the wireless sector. 63% of all the telecom money actually went into the wireless sector in 2005. Very different than what we saw in the past. We're seeing wireless broadband, entertainment, wireless components, all very strong right now. When you look at internet-specific companies, and those are companies that are fundamentally dependent upon the internet, in 2005, 13% of all companies that VCs invested in were internet-dependent companies. And that is the highest level ever. And when you really delve down into that, it's interesting to note that a third of all of those companies were first-time VC-backed companies. So it's a lot of earlier stage deals being done in the internet sector right now. You're seeing a lot of first rounds and very early stuff in that sector. You're also seeing a new phenomena in that a lot of companies are going out and not getting money from VCs and are able to be very successful in not having to get VC money because it's so much cheaper to create a company today than it was 5 years ago. And what those companies are doing is that they're being created not to go IPO. They're being created to be acquired by what we're calling more and more the E3, Google, eBay, and Yahoo. And you're seeing companies being created for the express interest of being acquired by those companies. And as you know, that it's working. And the question is that competition? Is that a good thing for the venture industry? Is that a bad thing for the venture industry? We think it's actually a good thing for the venture industry. There's more entrepreneurs are going to be out there that are going to create companies that are going to be excited. These are going to be serial entrepreneurs. They're going to be out there creating big companies that need venture capital money over the long run. And let's face it, the eBays and the Yahoos of the world, these are early stage companies in the whole scheme of things, and have a long way to go over the next 10, 20 years. So we actually think that's a good thing. We definitely are seeing in the stats the movement to consumer IT, and that shouldn't have come as a surprise. We went from hardware to software, from software to corporate IT, and from corporate IT to consumer IT. It makes perfect sense. What we're starting to see as well is interesting is that when we're seeing more and more of the convergence of technologies, particularly IT and life sciences, we're seeing an upswing in medical device deals right now at the expense of biotechnology deals. And we think a lot of that is the IT sector of these deals, as well as you can get these companies through the FDA pre-market approval process much faster. But you are seeing an upswing there. You're seeing, when you look at the consumer IT space in general, you're not seeing one area jump out and all the VCs are running to that space. You're seeing money being deployed pretty liberally in all the areas, which is also good news. I think that a couple of things that we're seeing from a long-term perspective, the aging population, and it'll be interesting to see if there are any companies here talking about, instead of new bells and whistles, simplification. Simplification, simplification, simplification for, the aging, not only U.S. population, but China is the fastest growing, oldest population ever recorded. So there are an awful lot of old people getting older. And the question is, will technology actually become more simple for those people to use? And many people believe that that is a business in and of itself. You're seeing a very strong interest in corporate compliance right now in VCs looking in that sector, not just because of Sarbanes-Oxley, but because, with healthcare services as well, Medicare, Medicaid, all of these things, corporate compliance is a very strong sector now. And mobile phone services we're also seeing as when we look at the numbers as being a strong area as well. With that, I just want to introduce Chris Shipley, who many of you already know. She's the executive producer of Demo and has been doing these conferences for many years.
10, yeah. I started very young.
Yeah, me too. she's covered personal technology businesses since 1984, and as many of you know, is a top technology analyst. And just wanted to open it up to you and see if you agree or disagree with anything I've said so far, and then kind of ask you some other questions about what's going on here.
Yeah, well, there's certainly a lot of fodder in what you've said, and I'm hoping that this discussion tonight will be a discussion and that your questions and comments will also come into play here. Where to start with all of that great information? You were talking about the senior market, and I was remembering being at an event a number of years ago where they were asking Rupert Murdoch about the aging population and the fact that cable had not reached its 100% penetration in the market. And he said, that's okay. The people who don't have cable, they're old. They'll die. And then we'll have 100% penetration. And what I think is very interesting in what you're talking about there is the fact that, frankly, we're all pushing that place and we're not planning to die anytime soon. And I think there is a tremendous opportunity there. And you really hit on a theme that I'll talk about tomorrow morning, this idea of simplification. In my mind, it's not just about an aging population or consumer versus business. And this idea that you can make something complex if it's for young people working in business is ridiculous. That, in fact, I believe we're reaching a point of diminishing return. That we've put so much technology into the market, we've made things so complex, there's so much information in the market, that if we don't put a lot of emphasis now on how we simplify access to technology, how we simplify user interface, how we simplify the way in which we interact with all of this, that consumers who, frankly, are just individuals, this term consumer is one that I struggle with a lot because I don't necessarily think we bifurcate our lives from I'm a consumer because I'm in my car driving to work, but once I'm at work, I'm an enterprise customer. And then at 5 o'clock, I become a consumer again. In fact, that's driving a whole different trend, I think. But as individuals, we need this stuff to be accessible. And if it's not, we're going to stop using it.
Right.
I was talking to actually the first person that I've, you guys are all BlackBerry addicts, I assume. But I was talking to somebody who said, I would, if the lawsuits turn out, we have to turn these things back in, I will be the first one to send my mind back. You know, this thing interrupts me. It changes the way I interact with people. I'm done with it. I'm getting arthritis in my thumbs. And it's not that this isn't a useful device. I mean, in fact, I think you would all probably say it's highly useful in your business. And yet, it's just not made his life more simple.
Mm-hmm.
And this point, we keep bumping up against it in little ways, and I don't think any of us can turn our backs on technology, and I don't think we would want to, but I do think we want it to be a lot easier, or we're going to start making different choices. And I think that's a big challenge that's facing the industry today.
So it's not plastics, it's simplification, and that's the word.
Well, plastics is an interface, and I think we need to figure out how we do that. And we're going to see some things over the next couple of days that do a great job of that. I mean, you think about, and I know many people are quite curious about the ice cream machine that's here.
Right.
Let me tell you, I didn't taste the ice cream before I chose the company, so this is not just driven by my sweet tooth. There's a tremendous amount of technology that's going into this machine to make a cup of fresh ice cream. The ice cream's great, and by all means, please enjoy it. But what's beautiful about this is an interface that's really in a touch screen, the amount of attention they paid to making it really simple for people is important. And I think that we think of interfaces, software, and what's on screen,
right,
and not necessarily sort of the plastics around it.
Having looked at, how many companies did you look at to bring out the companies that you have out today?
Well, demo's a year-round process,
yeah,
and my process of looking at companies is never-ending. So I talk to about 700 companies a year.
Okay.
And at each of our demo and demo fall events, we're looking at about 70 companies as our we can put that many folks on stage. So it's 20% of the companies that I see actually get to launch a product here.
And what have been the most active markets over the last year here, the last two demos, with this demo and the one, I guess, in Huntington Beach?
Well, you know, it shifts, and it's kind of a leading indicator.
Yeah.
You were talking about some markets in your opening comments where, and I was thinking, well, that was last demo, or that was demo 2 years ago. I think demo really is a leading indicator of what's
right,
happening in the
because
marketplace.
Because the numbers are going to follow.
Sure. Right. You all come here, then you invest,
right,
and
exactly,
then you come back and you say, look,
exactly,
what we're all investing in.
Right.
Stuff that was a demo.
Exactly.
Which is great, and I'm glad you do that. Right now we're seeing a lot of activity. You were talking about compliance. I heard a lot about compliance 12, 18 months ago.
Interesting.
Today, and in the last, say, 6 months, it's a theme, but it's not a driving theme to the marketing of a product. In fact, it's now sort of a secondary. We do this product, and oh, by the way, for people who care a lot about Sarbanes, we're able to market to that angle. But that's not driving a positioning in the market today. The sort of things that you will be able to see in the program, first, I think, are this whole movement toward computing as services. And we've talked about that at demos in the past, but I think it's certainly gaining momentum. And what I would call social computing, which we defined social media about 24 months ago as blogging and RSS and these sorts of things. Social computing, I think, is even another ripple out from that, where, again, if we go back to this simplification theme, how do you find stuff anymore? I mean, there's this belief that whatever I'm looking for is out there somewhere in the wide world of the internet, but I can't find it. A Google search result that says that there are 482,000 results is not useful. And the only way that starts to get useful, in my opinion, is when individuals find the one or two things that are really important and then share that that knowledge back with the collective. That's an example of social computing, social browsing. I think we're going to see a lot more activity in this space where these companies are providing the tools that let us compute, if you will, independently and yet contribute back to a whole. How all that gets monetized effectively, I think, is a big challenge, and certainly a challenge for you trying to, you know, certainly obviously make a smart investment. But I do see there's a substantial movement in that direction.
How about security?
Absolutely, and what we're seeing now in security is very much focused on individuals, again.
Right.
When you think about the business decision that a financial institution is going to make, and some very interesting numbers that have come out from the FDIC on this. A bank, let's say, a financial institution, in an instance of, or if they look at their risk around identity theft for one of their customers, their cost is about $1.50, $2. The hardware or software solutions that are in the market are going to cost them $4 to $5 a customer. You can't make, if you're a bank, an decision to buy that. That's not a good business decision. Now, if my identity is stolen, that's going to cost me $60,000 or $80,000, potentially. It's going to cost me a lot of hours, a lot of time, a lot of aggravation. My company is going to suffer because I'm spending my time on the phone with the credit bureaus, yada, yada, yada. So what we're seeing, and you'll see this in the companies that we talk about, I guess on Wednesday morning, are some point. You look in your program, Wednesday, I think it is. In any case, we're going to talk about these issues around the fact that these problems have to be tackled at an individual level where the pain is severe, and at a company level where there's absolutely a business advantage to installing these things.
Right.
I think ultimately the financial institutions will find that there's a marketing advantage to being able to say we are absolutely secure and we'll protect your identity and we'll guarantee it, which doesn't mean, by the way, we'll pay for it. It means we're going to make sure it doesn't happen to you. And that will create an opportunity to sell products into that market sector. But for now, a lot of the activity is really focused on this identity protection. That's clearly what consumers, what individuals, what small business and medium businesses are interested in. And that is the hot button in security right now.
When you look at, having done 10 years of this, when you look at the companies that are at this demo, do you see anything different about this group, this class, as compared to the class of last year or the class of 2 years ago? Are they looking for more money? Are they looking for VCs? Are they looking for angels? You know, anything standing out?
This year's group is by far the most underfunded group of companies that we've seen. In relation to where we saw funding, certainly in 98, 99, 2000.
Sure.
Right? Where you know, you'd
well,
go
we
in,
had $203 billion.
Yeah, give them money, see what they can do with it. That is not the case today, obviously. But more interestingly, they're underfunded in relative terms, but they're not underfunded relative to what they need.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're seeing is that great companies can get started with very little capital.
Right.
And you mentioned this, they can go from conception to initial product launch on some amount of money, $100,000, $200,000, certainly on that range that we would consider friends and family or seed financing. And they also will move from zero to 60 in terms of their acceleration into the market in a very short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Often in a period of time, frankly, that is less than the typical due diligence process of the venture community. So you've got these these teams that don't need a lot of money and they're moving really quickly.
Yeah.
And that, I think, poses an interesting new challenge for all of you, which is how do I, if I get in here and I can, you know, this growth curve is going quickly, how do I really capitalize on that? Or do I have to wait until that risk is out and we then fund the growth stage? But I think that we're you know, in the traditional seed A, B, C kind of round, we're going from seed to B or C round, and there's not a lot in the middle. And I think that's going to affect the way funds are structured and funds are put to work.
Are they are these entrepreneurs looking at things from saying, I this is a company that I want to take public, or are they looking at things and saying, you know, this is an acquisitions deal?
I think that for the most part, it's, you know, in the, if it's in the back of their mind, mm-hmm. and let me say, you know, there's less talk about exits today than there was certainly during the bubble, and even in those few years afterward.
Really?
There is not the slide in the deck that says, and if we do a great job, so-and-so is going to buy us. Although you're right, the triptych that you mentioned is certainly, interestingly, the acquisition hope for many of these companies. And it's interesting to me that, you know, it used to be Microsoft, and that's certainly fallen off the radar to some
right.
degree. And certainly they're building these companies more around feature sets than they are around long-term sustainability. But even still, there's not a sense of build and flip in the way that we saw certainly in 99, 2000. It's I think people who, and particularly when it's a repeat entrepreneur, they're passionate about just doing this stuff. And, you know, a number of these folks have, that I've talked to, and folks that are here this week, have been through this game a couple
right.
of times. So they're funding these companies on their own. And I don't want to say that they're sort of a recreational company. They're very serious about their businesses, but they're less serious about the process of, or less interested in the process of doing the roadshow and doing the slide deck and doing the song and dance to raise capital.
Do they have a different view of venture capitalists today than they, a lot of these entrepreneurs, particularly the serial ones, compared to a couple years ago?
Certainly serial entrepreneurs do.
Good or bad?
Yeah.
From this perspective.
You know, I think that the more so this year, I would say in the last 6 months, what I hear from serial entrepreneurs is, if I can go it alone during this early stage, this ramp-up stage, to build some real value into this company, I'm going to do it on my own. When I need to grow, when we make that decision that we're not going to be acquired by eBay, Yahoo, or Google, then that's an opportunity for me to go out into the market. I've created some value, and I'm in a better position mm-hmm. to be a partner with a venture capitalist. Not a lot of interest in, you know, floating a placemat at Bucks and hoping that that gets you some funding. And certainly that's not the reality today either, but I think there's a general sense from the repeat from all entrepreneurs now today that we have to go much further down the avenue of building our company before it makes sense to go out into the market and talk to the